deep in the Ouachita Mountains of western Arkansas, where the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, the Guerrilla Media Network presents The Reynolds Revealed, a new weekly show that, no matter the limitations that may trammel inquiry elsewhere, sifts and winnows without fear or favor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and today is Tuesday, May 7, 2013. This is episode number 13 of The Reynolds Reveal. I appreciate you for listening in, and therefore you are part of the show. And yes, we do welcome your calls here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number, 218-862-9829. Last week, it was a wonderful show as my special guest and stepson, entrepreneur, craft brewer, restaurateur, businessman Brian Arnett of West Virginia explained how he started his for-profit and lost business a decade ago and has made it thrive. One of the messages I think that's very important is he recommends you find out what you would love to do, because you're going to be doing it for a lot of hours in making a small business get up and go. My guest today is Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas, who is a fearless JFK assassination researcher and all-around troublemaker who has some real dirt on Jeb Bush, as well as the Bush crime family and the Clintons. And Jeb Bush, I think this is important, it's not just historical, because Jeb Bush is a potential president who may run in 2016. But first, consider a couple of Reynolds Reveal issues, and perhaps I'll get beyond the first two, but I want to spend some time on these first two. First is a 9/11 airplane part or parts were allegedly found there in three blocks north of the World Trade Center in southern Manhattan. And the other issue is climatism. Our president, for one, brings it up that we've got to go all out to arrest global warming. And this is a complete fraud, a complete hoax. And I'm going to point out some very interesting things. Okay. What about the 9/11 plane part story that first appeared? Really, it was on a Friday, but I first noticed it on Saturday, April 27, and the headline was 9/11 landing gear found at the building site. And this account describes it as a 5-foot-long piece of landing gear believed to be from one of the planes destroyed in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack. It's discovered between a mosque site and another building near the World Trade Center. Its twisted, rusted metal part had cables and levers on it and is about 3 feet wide and 1.5 feet deep, discovered by surveyors on Wednesday inspecting the lower Manhattan site of a planned Islamic community center. You want to get that in, excuse me, frequently. Here, it's a mosque. We got to keep this meme going. You know, you got to set up the terrorists and the Islamic jihadists. You got to mention this frequently. Keep reminding us. Nothing like repetition. Okay, then let's go to the next story, which was Tuesday, April 30. And now they say it came from a wing, not landing gear, police said Monday. Like these flatfoots know a lot about aircraft parts. The 5-foot piece is a trailing edge flap support structure, police said. It's closer to the body of the plane and helps secure wing flaps. So we've gone from landing gear to wing flaps. And by the way, if you are on an airliner and you can, are you near the wing? Your seat is got it in sight. When you're landing, you watch that ballet of parts up and down, in and out. It's quite remarkable. Boeing officials told police the part came from one of its 767 airliners, but it isn't possible to determine which flight. Now, that is a flat-out lie. That really uncorks Morgan. All planes have all these parts with unique numbers on them. So you can identify in the event of a crash, that's a principal purpose, what aircraft you're dealing with. And earlier, now they dropped that in subsequent stories, they dropped it that there was a Boeing part number. So you can go to the maintenance log, you can go to records and find out right away what, that's the first thing you do in a air crash investigation, which has never been performed at any of these four alleged aircraft crash sites of 9/11. Now, here is a comment I got from John Lear, the famous retired pilot. He looked at that photo, and I've only seen this one photo that they run in the newspaper as well. But he says, that piece does not look like aviation construction to me. Too thin, no cotter pins, etc. And he told me on a telephone conversation, it looks like Ace Hardware. They don't allow Ace Hardware stuff in aircraft. It's got it's built for air construction airliners. This is just a joke. Bad joke. And then he sent me in an email that he says, attached is a photo of the kind of cargo tie-down I think that is. That's what it looks like, is a cargo tie-down. It's like the tie straps or the ratchet straps I use to secure a motorcycle in transit. Okay, and then we've got a subsequent story here in the media. Coroner's office searches 9/11 site. They're still looking for the remains of some 1,000 people. Okay, and it says in the story, and a length of rope found entwined around the piece, which Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly had said could point to someone having intentionally lowered the chunk into the alley, was actually left there by police. Police officers responding to the report of the wreckage last week wrapped the rope around that part to move it as officials looked for a serial number or other identifying marks. Yeah, where is it? Let's have some serial numbers. None of these crash sites of 9/11, so-called crash sites, ever produced one serial number. And now this is going to drop out. Okay, I'm going to continue with the same piece. More than 2,600 people died when the Twin Towers collapsed. They didn't collapse. They were turned to dust in the air, fine powder. Yet, despite years of combing through the tons of resulting dust and debris, no trace has been found of more than 1,000 of those victims. Yeah, they were turned to dust. Not just steel, concrete, and other innards of these buildings. Okay, May 2nd, another story on this. No remains found at 9/11 debris site. Plane part removed, area examined. New York City officials said Wednesday no human remains were found in the soil behind a building where wreckage was discovered last week, quote, from one of the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center more than a decade ago, unquote. Of course, they produced so few parts from the plane crash, it's ridiculous to talk about it. But, okay, it's three blocks north of the World Trade Center site. And then we got to mention the mosque again. Now, I'm going to read you a statement by Andrew Johnson, who was on my program 4 or 5 weeks ago from England. And he is a first-rate 9/11 researcher. And he writes, several people have sent me this story or some version of it. He says, I don't have much to comment on this really because what was actually there. However, it cannot have come from plane crashes that happened at the World Trade Center. That's my position as well. You can go to my website, nomoregames.net, and read. I've been putting out articles for a number of years now proving this up. Back to Andrew Johnson. Wing struts made of aluminum cannot cut through steel girders. only Ness would have you believe that. It's absolute bull. Andrew goes on, I also discussed the reports of landing gear being found in the aftermath of the destruction. In this article, he references checktheevidence.com. You can go there and find his work in this area. And he says, of course, out of all the areas where this thing could have been found, one, it was found in a place where a mosque could be mentioned in the story. It was a building site, therefore probably secured and not easily accessible to the public. Yeah, it was. It's a very narrow little gap between a couple of buildings. It sat there for over 11 years unnoticed with all those high-rise blocks looking onto the site, question mark. It is claimed it has a Boeing part number. Has anyone seen any photos showing this? I haven't. I mention this because NIST, in its 10,000 pages of technical reports about the destruction of the towers, presented no photos or data showing any serial numbers of any supposed plane parts recovered from any of the three sites. People can watch Richard D. Hall. He was on as well on this show. Richard D. Hall's analysis, if they wish, at richplanet.net/911. He 3D modeled the videos of the South Tower hit from 26 videos and find they all show the same path. And that suggests, since planes didn't crash, that there was some kind of projection technology to fool people. Okay, other major issue I want to bring up here is unstoppable solar cycles. If you go to YouTube, find unstoppable solar cycles. This is an 11-minute, very instructive anti-climate alarm, factual video. And it starts off in Greenland. There was established by the Vikings a thriving colony or settlement. And by 1350, however, approximately 350 years later, there was no one there, according to somebody who was sent there to report on it. And why? Why had Greenland been abandoned? Because it had grown so cold. And this was what they call the Little Ice Age, the beginning of the Little Ice Age. And what this hints at is the climate is not perfectly constant. It's not a constant in nature. There are fluctuations in climate that the Earth has gone through. And two experts who are climate experts, Dr. Willie Soon, who's an astrophysicist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, and Dr. David Leggett at the University of Delaware, Center for Climate Research, lay this out very well. And it shows that man has coped with natural changes throughout man's history of some 200,000 years, it's thought, Homo sapiens. And cold eras have alternated with warm on an approximately 1,500-year timetable. Now, I don't think it's that perfectly regular. But beginning around the 1850s, the Little Ice Age ended and the modern warming trend began, although it's only about a 1 or less than 2 degrees per century warming that we're talking about. And they point out a very commonsensical thing. The sun is key to changes in our climate. It's the main driver of our climate. And the sun has these magnetic fields, and it goes through cycles. And this whole alarm about changes in the climate, and particularly warming, has only gone up within the last few decades. And people argue that CO2 is the big villain, carbon dioxide is the cause. But experts point out, wait a minute. It turns out that the Earth's temperature changes first by as much as several hundred years, and then the increase in CO2 follows. And this is long precedes man. They go they go back with data that supposedly are reliable 650,000 years of the Earth. And what happens if, as the Earth's temperature goes up because of sun activity, vegetation increases, and that increases CO2, and then the oceans warm, and the oceans contain lots of CO2. So the temperature rise releases more CO2 or carbon dioxide. Meanwhile, these political alarmists and activists are saying, we need to tax carbon, we need to tax carbon, so as to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions. So that's pure politics. And both of these scientists in this 11-minute video, which is Unstoppable Solar Cycles, wring their hands about how science is being corrupted by the political process. And that's a very unfortunate thing. In fact, I would argue that our technological advance has slowed since the 1960s. And it's that reflects the takeover of science by government. It's tragic. And they point out that, hey, here we do these big studies with a lot of science, and then they want the summary. Can't you beef this up? Can you make it look a little more like a disaster? So the key to this is climate changes and fluctuates, not because of man's activity, and that's proven by CO2 increases, lagging temperature increases. You are listening to Steve Reynolds Reveal, and I'm going to welcome my guest on the other side of the break, Robert Morrow. He's got some dirt on Jeb Bush. I want to hear about this. We'll hurry back.
You're getting smooth. You're almost a pro. You listen back to your whole show, right?
What's that?
You listen back to your whole show, right?
Oh, I do. Yes, I enjoy listening. That's one of the pleasures of this. Peter Jennings is the model for being smooth and glib, right?
Oh yeah, I loved Peter Jennings.
Yeah, and I was surprised. I shouldn't have been, I guess, to find out via Robert Morrow that he was CFR, Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, now,
it's like 4,500 people, so they aren't, that's too big a body to be real conspirators. But at any rate, he was a member.
And you can greet him when he comes on.
Hello, it's Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Morgan.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Crispy. Yeah, clear as a bell.
Super.
Hey, we got Pete Santilli is the star of the Guerrilla Media Network and their foremost technician. He is on with us.
Okay.
I'm host of the Pete Santilli Show, but I gladly, and it's an honor to do Dr. Reynolds' board. Absolutely.
Super. Well, yeah. Glad to be here, too.
Yeah, pleasure to have you.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be some hot stuff. Really.
We're going to go right into it, We're going to talk about Jeb Bush and Iran-Contra and CIA drugs and Oliver North and all the various data points that point in that direction.
You know what? I was stunned to read this, most of it is culled out of these books. There's so many good things in these books, and you're doing a really valuable thing bringing all this together. But okay. It was almost like reading about Lyndon Johnson.
I'm going to put you guys on mute and bring you back. You guys can still talk. I'm going to have you on mute. Here we go.
To make you their slave. Have you ever wondered what smart growth really is and just how far the global elite will go to get what they want? Is Agenda 21 already at work in your neighborhood? The answer to all your questions can be found by going to thepetesantillishow.com and clicking on the Agenda 21 tab at the top of the page. Order your copy of Behind the Green Mask, You and Agenda 21 by Rosa Corey on Amazon.com, and you'll support the efforts of The Pete Santilli Show. Behind the Green Mask blows.
Welcome back to The Reynolds Reveal. I am your host, Ken Reynolds, and we at the Guerrilla Media Network welcome your calls, and the number is 218-862-9829, and as we get deeper into the show, I expect a few callers. My guest, my special guest today is Robert Morrow from Austin, Texas, who I know best as a diligent, thorough, unafraid, fearless, courageous JFK assassination researcher, but he throws his net wider than that. Robert, welcome to the Reynolds Reveal.
Hey, Morgan, it's an honor to be here.
Great. Tell us a little about yourself before we go to content. We're going to just be scalding some ears out there, but tell us who Robert Morrow is.
Right. I am a political researcher and a political activist from Austin, Texas. I got my undergraduate degree in history from Princeton University back in the 1980s. I got my graduate degree in business and an MBA from the University of Texas in the early 90s. I'm a self-employed investor, but I'm also a political researcher and a political activist, and I like to talk about topics that are often excluded from the mainstream media because they're so radioactively true.
So you're like a magnet drawn to these radioactive topics, and it's great. Hey, I get the impression, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that you're not welcome by some of these other allegedly fearless investigators of inside jobs and skullduggery, corruption in high places. Is that your impression?
Well, it all depends. I mean, I'm in the field of the JFK assassination research, and there are different division lines on theories on what happened, and sometimes it gets personal. But, you know, actually, I do think I'm well thought of in many quarters, actually.
Yeah, you certainly are in this quarter. Now, you brought my attention to your article on you posted on April 25 this year, only less than 2 weeks ago, on it's Economic Policy Journal, called The Bush Family, Oliver North, and the Murder of CIA Drug Smuggler Barry Seal. Now, I remember that Barry Seal name, and I'm not very far from the remote, mysterious airport in western Arkansas, Mena. And it is. You can drive right on down the highway, and you hardly notice the airport. It is somewhat hidden. So I'm a little bit familiar with this, but this is a stunning article, Robert. So where are we going to start? Tell us about Bushes, the Clintons, and drug trade.
Well, I will say this. If folks want to find this on the Internet, all you have to do is Google Jeb Bush, Barry Seal, or Barry Seal, Jeb Bush, and my article on the 1986 murder of CIA drug smuggler Barry Seal will pop up. In a nutshell, it's this, is that Jeb Bush when he was in the 1980s, when he was the 32-year-old chairman of the Dade County, Florida Republican Party, he was up to his eyeballs in Iran-Contra. And what they were doing in Iran-Contra was the U.S. government was bringing in massive amounts of drugs, supposedly to buy weapons for the Nicaraguan Contras. The Bushes were involved. Bill Clinton was involved. It was a very big operation, and Barry Seal was one of the pilots in that operation.
Now, you know what is interesting to me is that you're pointing out the real scandal. It was a scandal, but they didn't peel the onion deep enough for obvious reasons. They're going to become obvious. But it was a scandal in that you're not supposed to you're violating the Bolin Amendment. You're not supposed to be aiding the Contras in Nicaragua, and you're not supposed to be, coddling terrorists or arming terrorist regimes in Iran and all that superficial stuff, you might say.
Correct. That's the superficial stuff. The other thing you're not supposed to be doing is running hundreds of millions of dollars of drugs into America illegally, and that's exactly what they were doing. So anyhow, people ask, who was Barry Seal, right? Barry Seal was a drug smuggler, one of the best of all time. He was, of course, a CIA drug smuggler. He started learning to fly when he was a teenager in the Civil Air Patrol. And by the way, Lee Harvey Oswald was also in the Civil Air Patrol for a little while. It was a recruiting ground. It was kind of like a Boy Scouts for kids that want to learn how to fly airplanes. And it later became a recruiting ground for the CIA and for the military. So Barry Seal, back in the 1950s, when he was but a teenager, he was making airplane trips for the CIA and bringing weapons to aid Fidel Castro. Many folks don't know this, but the CIA in the early years was actually aiding Fidel Castro as he tried to overthrow the Batista government in Cuba.
That, you know, that's interesting because you think of the CIA and the mafia, organized crime, being allied, and yet the mafia had their casinos and investments that were very well protected by Batista, and they didn't want Castro to come into power, did they?
Well, no, they didn't. But they, at that time, they knew that Batista was very unpopular, and the CIA was literally arming both sides because they wanted to flip a coin, heads they win, tails they win. But that's a side point. So Barry Seal, he did that, you know, when he was a teenager. In the 1960s, he's flying for the agency. He's flying for Air America. At the same time, he has a real job as a TWA pilot. That's his real job. He's really working for the CIA, doing all kinds of covert operations, drug smuggling, and so forth. So by the 1970s, Barry Seal is heavily involved in the drug trade. He's an expert pilot. He's a daredevil pilot. And he's not just organizing his own plane. He's organizing a fleet of airplanes to bring drugs into America when we get to the early 1980s.
And if you're involved in the drug trade, there's going to be some people who become inconvenient. And one of them turns out to be Barry Seal, right?
And one of them turns out to be Barry Seal. I mean, that's what drug cartels do. You can't get around it. If you're running a major drug cartel, you're going to be, of course, breaking the law. You're hopefully going to be making a lot of money. And unfortunately, you're going to be murdering people. You're going to be murdering people who are your competitors and murdering people in your own operation who are a threat to talk, who are loose cannons, who are reckless, for whatever reason. And by the mid-1980s, Barry Seal had gotten in trouble with the uncorrupt law enforcement in America. See, at that time, there were two types of law enforcement. You have your corrupt law enforcement, the Bushes, the Clintons, and the part of the government that is actually running drugs into America. Then you have a non-corrupt, like local Louisiana police law enforcement. I'm sure they're corrupt to a certain degree, who is charging Barry Seal for carrying drugs into America. And the IRS was literally told Barry Seal, you have a $30 million tax liability. Because the way they look at it, they figure, well, We estimate you brought in $60 million worth of drugs. We're going to charge you at 50%. Therefore, you owe us $30 million. That's how the IRS rolls. And Barry Steele did not like that. And so what does Barry Steele do? He has a personal relationship with both Bill Clinton in Arkansas and Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, who, by the way, was involved in Iran-Contra up to his eyeballs with Oliver North and William Casey. And so Barry Steele, he calls Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush in February of 1986, and he says, look, you know, you got to get these IRS people off my back. You got to make sure I don't get charged with any more drug crimes. I'm working for you guys. You know, I demand you bail me out. And then I'll tell you the rest of that story if you want me to.
Yes, but let me interrupt by asking the basis of most of your information in this area of life is about these 10 books. I counted them by Hopsiger and Gary Webb and Ambrose Evans Pritchard, Al Martin, and the like. Is that right?
Correct. All these people who were either involved in Iran-Contra, who were very close to either Jeb Bush, like Al Martin was, or close to Bill Clinton, like L.D. Brown was, or close to Oliver North, like Chip Tatum were, they all wrote books, and they all told their stories. And then you have people like Daniel Hopsicker and Gary Webb and Ambrose Pierce, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who investigated it. And so the cumulative effect of these books is like there's no question at all. The government was running massive amounts of drugs in the 1980s. You know, people say, well, you mean was there a CIA guy on a street corner in Compton handing out cocaine? No. No, they were flying it. They were wholesaling it. They were flying it in to rural airstrips like Mena, Arkansas, or to military bases like Homestead Air Force Base, or to Venice Airport in Florida. And they were handing it off to the black drug gangs, the right-wing militias, the old-school mafia on the East Coast. Even Hell's Angels had a distribution network of drugs. And so that's who were the actual retailers of this, whereas the CIA was the wholesaler of the drugs.
And these authors are amazingly consistent and interlocking. In other words, their research, their personal experience. And if you take, like, Chip Tatum, who was an assassin for George Herbert Walker Bush, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And he's got the documents, for example, showing his flights to Honduras and the like.
That is correct. So anyhow, back to the Barry Steele murder. I think the trigger effect of it was an argument he had with George Herbert Walker Bush, the vice president. And here's what Daniel Hopsicker came across. Daniel Hopsicker wrote this incredible book. I encourage you folks to buy it. It's called Barry and the Boys, the CIA, the Mob, and America's Secret History. You read that book, you'll never look at modern American history the same way again. Or you could read Terry Reed's book, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. It's called Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. You read those two books, you'll be stunned. So anyhow, here's what Barry Steele was going on. So Daniel Hopsicker talks to Barry Steele's lawyers years later after he was murdered, you know, on February 19th, 1986. And so one of his lawyers was a guy named Louis Unglesby, who's still today, you know, one of the blue-chip lawyers in Louisiana. And here's what they said. He said, Unglesby was with Steele when he retired to a backroom Sharpstein stated. Sharpstein was another lawyer for Steele. He watched as Steele placed a call to George Bush, that's Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush. He heard Barry Steele tell Bush, if you don't get these IRS, you know, assholes,
bleep,
off my back, I'm going to blow the whistle on the Contra scheme. Sharpstein spoke solemnly, aware of the gravity of his words. That's why he's dead, is what Unglesby said. In other words, Barry Steele's lawyers thought that threatening George Herbert Walker Bush was why he got pumped full of bullets on February 19, 1986, outside his halfway house in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You can Google the name Barry Steele murder, or Jeb Bush, Barry Steele. So that is one data point right
and
there, Morgan.
They convicted three Colombians of the murder. But,
bingo. So you say, well, what happened to that case? Well, Okay, they caught three or four of the murderers, which were Colombians, and they convicted them, but they felt that there was something more to the case. So they didn't give them the death penalty. They gave them life in prison. And the key thing about these Colombians, Morgan, is they told their lawyer that they thought they were working for Oliver North. Oliver North, back in the 1980s, had a code name. His name was John Caffey when he worked for the National Security Council.
And there is corroborating evidence for that proposition, is there not?
Well, they told their lawyers that they thought they were working for a guy named John Caffey. It turns out John Caffey, you know, from the various other books I have, that was Oliver North's code name. But it's more than that. So we have that from one angle. Then we have what Al Martin said. Al Martin was a naval intelligence operative who worked very closely with Jeb Bush at the epicenter of Iran-Contra in the 1980s.
And okay, Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas, a wonderful, fearless researcher, is going to continue his analysis of Jeb Bush's deep involvement in drug trade and murder on the other side of the break. This is The Reynolds Reveal. I am your host, Morgan Reynolds, and I hope you will return.
Yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 to 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Do you owe the IRS more than $10,000? Well, it happens to the best of us. Just ask Charlie.
I was a pro NFL player, defensive back. Yes, I did get a letter from the IRS.
It's a scary thing, even for a big man like Charlie.
Well, man, when you see those dreaded letters, capital IRS, $60,000, man, you almost dropped to your knees. You know, they were trying to levy my accounts, garnish me, real bad situation.
Charlie found out about the law offices of Craig Zimmerman.
I heard their commercial on the radio. I said, well, hey, let me give them a call. It was like talking to my brother, talking to a great friend. I called Craig Zimmerman, and they put a stop to it.
You'll love the way they do business.
Like we say in the NFL, they never drop the ball. They did a great job for me.
You may be able to significantly reduce your tax debt. Call the law offices of Craig Zimmerman and get your game plan. 800-638-0727.
Craig Zimmerman, they threw a touchdown for me.
Call now and find out how much you can save. 800-638-0727. 800-638-0727.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and today I've got a wonderful guest, a fearless, aggressive, and thorough JFK assassination researcher and a researcher on the Bushes, the Clintons, and the drug trade. And his name is Robert Morrow from Austin, Texas. If you would like to call, and the Guerrilla Media Network does welcome calls, especially from first-time callers, the number is 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. Before the break there, Robert, you got deep into Jeb Bush's participation in this unholy mess.
Yeah, it is so, you know, ironic. You know, Jeb Bush is today thinks he can present himself as some sort of a commentator on immigration reform, education reform, you know, like he is some sort of a civil public servant. But when you look at his track record, you look back 25 years, you'll find that not only was Jeb Bush, you know, running a lot of drugs into America, you know, it's very likely that he was participating in murders as well. And so we're going to the Barry Seal murder. So Al Martin was a naval intelligence operative who worked very closely with Jeb Bush. And he wrote a book called The Conspirators, Confessions of an Iran-Contra Insider. It came out in the year 1999. And he talks about his experiences with Jeb Bush and Oliver North. Now, they come off looking like mafia. And here's what he says about the Barry Seal murder. He talks about meetings they used to have down in Dade County, Florida. Jeb Bush would, with people like Oliver North, Richard Secord, Dewey Claridge, or even Sam Watson and Fred Ickley. These were all CIA military operatives who were supporting Nicaraguan Contras and at the same time committing all kinds of epic crimes. So I'm quoting Al Martin here. He says, "Dewey seldom attended the meetings, but this time the four of them were discussing the assassination of Barry Seal and how it was to be carried out since Barry was becoming an increasing liability." The time period on this is September 1985. "I told Jeb I had substantial corroboration of that meeting, and I think Jeb understood what I meant." He's probably talking about meeting that Al says he's taped it. "It would certainly place him, Jeb, into a conspiracy to assassinate a CIA drug runner for the sake of political expediency. When I was through speaking, Jeb became quiet, and his demeanor became serious and changed. He became flushed, as he often does when he's frightened. Jeb responded by telling me, 'It would be most unfortunate if I were to do that, since I might wind up like George Morales or Johnny Molina.'" And those were two guys who were later killed in Iran-Contra.
What's funny is Jeb Bush tells him that at 9:30 in the morning, and Johnny Molina didn't die, or he was killed, until that evening.
At 10 o'clock. That's a very important point. Now, we're going to get to that in a minute, but I'm going to read you another anecdote that just to show you what Oliver North and Jeb Bush were up to. And of course, certainly George Herbert Walker Bush, they were murdering people in the 1980s. And here is a quote that kind of sums it up pretty nicely. This is Al Martin talking about Oliver North. He says, "When Jeb Bush, Oliver North, and Dewey Claridge once spoke about an individual, North laughed and said, 'Well, we haven't decided how we will rule his demise yet, whether it will be an accident, natural causes, or a suicide.'" and so Oliver North is the guy who was almost elected to the United States Senate in the year 1994. He's a guy who has a TV show on Fox called War Stories. He writes books. He goes on book tours. And he gets on TV. And he talks about drugs and terrorism. I think Oliver North would know a lot about drugs, terrorism, and murder.
It's right up his alley.
Right up his alley. It's his skill set. So that would be one. Now, you asked me about the murder of Johnny Molina. Okay. That's a pretty important one, too. And if you guys will bear with me, I'm going to have to read that, too, because I haven't quite memorized all this stuff yet. But so Alan Martin was talking to Jeb, like, you know, look, you know, I could write a book on this, or I could go public. You know, here's a here's an important quote that Jeb Bush told Alan Martin. He said, Al, there's no constituency for the truth. And Jeb's kind of right on that, because the truth is so discrediting to the elites of both political parties, to the media, to everybody behind the Bush or a Clinton who's ever worked for them, that it is hard to get out. But you know what, Morgan? I think you and I, and maybe your listeners, are a little bit different. I think we do have, we are a constituency for the truth. Would you not say so?
Oh, yeah, and it's growing, right? I mean, thankfully, alternative radio and the Internet, we are gaining traction just terrifically. And, you know,
absolutely.
Hey, while we're on that, I'm going to even say a good word on behalf of academe. That's why I went into it. It was supposedly about the truth, and you could actually make a pretty comfortable living at it. So... yeah, there's a constituency for the truth. I mean, it's probably immense out in Main Street America.
Well, no, it's very important. That quote is very important. You know, Jeb Bush is a guy whose attitude is, quote, there is no constituency for the truth. But you know what? This kind of material is extremely damaging to Jeb Bush. It will never make the mainstream media, but people are going to talk about it. Now, here's the other quote you were talking about. You're talking about the murder of Johnny Molina and how Al Martin was being threatened before that even occurred. He says, well, here we go. He said, Jeb went on to mention to me about Morales. He said, of course, Morales will never leave prison alive. He says, fast forward to the time when Morales was due to be released from prison early 1992. The day before Morales was set to be released, he did, in fact, slip on a bar of soap in the prisoner's shower and supposedly died as a result of the fall. And so, in other words, he probably got killed in prison before he went out. But here's the Johnny Molina murder. Who was Johnny Molina? Johnny Molina was an operative that was working with Jeb Bush in the middle of Iran-Contra doing God knows what, whether it was financial crime or running drugs or flying airplanes or whatever. He was a threat to go public. And so it says, here's Al Martin. He says, quote, at that moment, the threat Jeb was making to me, the sublime threat about not wanting to wind up like Johnny Molina, really didn't mean anything to me because I knew as of the day before that Molina was still alive and well. I didn't think anything of it until the next day when I got into my office and opened the Miami Herald. I read that Mr. Molina had, in fact, quote, committed suicide that evening in the parking lot of a restaurant in Pensacola, Florida. He had, quote, committed suicide by discharging an entire 20-round clip of a MAC-10 into his own body. Of course, by the following day, the body had quickly been cremated. Hold on. Had the body quickly been cremated before his family was notified and before an autopsy could be done, it's the same old story. It was interesting to note that Jeb had issued that threat at the meeting, which was held at about 10:30 a.m., Molina, quote, committed suicide about 9:30 p.m. that evening.
Hey, you know, Chip.
So you wonder why people call it the Bush crime family.
Yeah, right. I'm just thinking about these guys aren't smart enough to set it up in advance till we get to Chip Tatum, Pegasus. In other words, he made sure it would be a real problem for them to murder him. Maybe
right.
I'm going too far ahead of the story, but
No, we're doing fine here. Okay, so folks have heard about, you know, Daniel Hofstetter and his investigation into the life of Barry Seal. Daniel Hofstetter concluded that Oliver North was the one that murdered Barry Seal, and anybody with common sense will conclude that the Bushes were encouraging Oliver North to make sure Barry Seal did not see the light of day. Pardon me. So Oliver North, so what did he say about the Barry Seal murder? He said, quote, this is Chip Tatum, I should say. He said Oliver North told him that he, Vice President Bush, is very concerned about the missing monies. I think he's going to have Jeb, as Bush, arrange something out of Columbia. He told his comrades, not thinking twice in my presence. what Mr. North was referring to ended up being the assassination of Barry Seal by members of the Medellin cartel in early 1986. It was really the Cali cartel that was killing Barry Seal, because they were using the Cali cartel to wipe out the Medellin cartel and Barry Seal at the same time on the same day.
Wipe out your competition and, as you say, murder anyone who might spill the beans.
It's a twofer. Wipe out the competition. Yeah. Wipe out anybody who's supposedly working for you who you think is going to go public. See, Barry Seal was a threat to plea bargain in Louisiana and give up higher-ups in the food chain in the Iran-Contra scandal. That's it in a nutshell. Of course, the higher-ups would be Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton, the Democratic governor of Arkansas. That's who the higher-ups were.
Guess why both major political parties don't want this exposed. Yeah, and no surprise. Interviewing on the Reynolds Reveal Robert Morrow, and this stuff is dynamite. We're finding out a lot about the Bushes, the Clintons, the drug trade and murder, and Jeb Bush. And it's all cross-referenced and documented by Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas. So please join us on the other side of the break, please.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
This is Dr. Judy Wood, author of Where Did the Towers Go? And you're listening to the Guerrilla Media Network.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Jerky is a proud sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show. Not only that, Jay's been a loyal listener since we first got
super
started.
Super lean and beefy.
Visit thepetesantillishow.com and click on the Jay's Jerky ad anywhere on the page. You'll find great deals, Jay's weekly and daily specials, and best of all, Jay supports the Pete Santilli Show like no other sponsor.
It's smoking.
Listen live daily to the Pete Santilli Show. You'll never know when he's calling in, but when he does, you can bet he's got an offer you won't be able to pass up.
Superior quality meat.
Jay's Premium Natural Jerky. Wonderful flavors in beef, chicken, turkey, and natural buffalo jerky.
For a mouth-watering organic experience, grab a bag of Jay's Jerky today.
Place your order today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. We've got a hot show working here. I am your host, Morgan Reynolds, and we at the Guerrilla Media Network do welcome your calls, 218-862-9829. Now, at one point, I was reading some of Robert Morrow's work, our special guest from Austin, Texas, who's a fearless researcher into corruption in America. And Robert wrote, "Now we know why Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush are, quote, so chummy," unquote. And another name that comes to mind is Ross Perot. And Robert Morrow has some special insight into why Ross Perot ran for president against George Herbert Walker Bush. Robert.
Correct. Ross Perot was incensed about the CIA government drug trade that Bush was doing. And here's how he found out about it. You know, Ross Perot is a national hero, whether you agree with all of his politics or not. He's a straight shooter. He would crawl over broken glass to get a POW, two miles away. Mm-hmm. So Ross Perot in the 1980s was very concerned about leftover American POWs in Vietnam in Southeast Asia. So he commissioned a highly decorated Green Beret named Bo Greitz to go to Burma and see if there are any more American POWs that had crossed the border and were being held. And so Bo Greitz goes to Burma in Southeast Asia, and he meets with the biggest drug lord in that area, a guy named Khun Sa. And he says to Khun Sa, you know, do you have any of our boys? Do you know where they might be located? Are there any camps, any tiger cages? And Khun Sa says, well, we don't have any of your American POWs.
Hey, Robert, I want to interrupt that story. Hold that thought. We have a call from Steve in Pittsburgh on line one.
Okay.
Steve, you have a question or comment for Robert Morrow. Steve, go ahead.
We have a call from Steve Pittsburgh on line one.
Okay. Steve? Yeah. Okay, there's a comment man in the chat room. Why are the people all still alive? Is Steve available?
Yeah, Steve's available.
Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Go ahead, Steve. You're live.
Okay. I'm just enjoying all the information, and I just wanted to thank you for the information because there's a lot of stuff that I knew, but there's so much more that you are providing that I didn't know, and I just wanted to call in and just say thank you so much for the needed information to point out exactly how corrupt and how screwed up this country is, because these same people are in office, and now their kids are getting old enough to run for office, like Prescott Bush number what? What number is he, you know?
First of all, thank you very much, and for your comment. The truth is very important. The truth will set you free. Yes, it is rather remarkable, with all this stuff on the public record, all this corruption, crime, drugs, killing is everything, that the Bushes and the Clintons are still at the highest levels of American politics, and still their children, the next generation, George P. Bush and Chelsea Clinton, are on the track to run for public office one day. It is astounding.
Hey, Steve, you're a vet of the Vietnam War, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Robert, let's go back to Bo Greitz then, because this takes us to Southeast Asia.
Well, we're going to get there. We're going to answer the question. Somebody had a comment online about how come these folks are still alive.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, Barry Seal's not alive. He got pumped full of bullets on February 19th, 1986, outside his halfway house in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. George Morales is not alive. Johnny Molina is not alive. There are many, many others that are not alive. And many of the people who are telling you these things, they were targets for assassination themselves and could very well have been killed. I'll give you an example. The fellow that wrote the book, Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, his name is Terry Reed. That book came out in 1994. It's a great book. I encourage you to read it. he himself was a target for assassination 8 years before. The reason we know that is because L.D. Brown, who was Bill Clinton's favorite state trooper, wrote about it in his book. See, they were worried that Terry Reid was going to go public, and they were trying to assassinate him. And so Felix Rodriguez, who is an anti-Castro Cuban, CIA operative, close ties to the Bush family, he went to L.D. Brown, who Bill Clinton had gotten into the CIA, and who Barry Seal was his handler, and he said, you know what, I want you to go kill this guy down in Mexico. He was the guy that was on the plane with you when the cocaine came back. We want to get rid of him. So L.D. Brown went to Mexico. He literally had his gun in his hands, and he had Terry Reid in his sights. But he said, you know what, that's not the guy that was on that plane. And he saw his wife, and he saw his kids, and they were outside playing like near a hotel or a hotel swimming pool, and he just simply could not pull the trigger. So in answer to your question is, you know, there some of them were alive, but just barely. And I'm sure Al Martin.
Robert, just to embellish that, you also point out that the assassination is stage three. They try these persuasion methods short of that.
Right. Usually. So now we're going to get to Ross Perot, who came under attack himself and was a target for assassination. So Ross Perot sends Bo Gright to Southeast Asia. He talks to Khun Sa, who is the drug lord for that area. And he says to him, you know, do you have our POWs? And Khun Sa says, well, I don't have any of your POWs. However, I sell my entire heroin crop to your government every year, and my point of contact is Richard Armitage in your Department of Defense. And when Bo Gryce heard that, he said you could have knocked him over with a feather. And when Ross Perot heard that, he went nuts. So Perot, you know, he you understand, he's a Texas billionaire. Texas billionaires aren't used to people not doing what they say, okay? So he goes to Washington, D.C. He figures, I'm just going to have a meeting with the Department of Defense. I'm going to talk to Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush. My God, do you know that your people are running drugs into America? And what Ross Perot finds out was that Richard Armitage was more important than he and more protected than he. And Ross Perot himself became the target of the government, the target of George Herbert Walker Bush. That's how much money they were making in the illegal drug trade, that they could tell a billionaire from Texas to basically go stick it. So Ross Perot had his high-level intelligence classification taken away. He was not allowed to see intelligence anymore. He had a big argument with George Herbert Walker Bush, just a massive falling out. And so in 1992, he decides, you know what, I'm going to run for president, and I'm going to get rid of George Herbert Walker Bush. And that's why Perot was running. He was not running to win. He was running to take out old man Bush. So do you have a question, Morgan?
Or I should just continue, okay? Let me back up and ask you this question, because you know the literature so well. And I recall the first time that anyone made waves big time was Gary Webb's book, and that must have come out in the 90s, pointing out that the CIA was deep into the drug trade, but I don't think he ever pointed to our high visibility leaders like Clinton and Bush, did he?
Well, he didn't, but he had an opportunity to, because he knew about what L.D. Brown had said. Barry Seal, Bill Clinton got L.D. Brown into the CIA. Bill Clinton himself was recruited into the CIA in 1968 when he was a student at Oxford and he was a Rhodes Scholar. We know that because Gordon Meyer told Jack Wheeler, who's a Republican insider, that. So when L.D. Brown comes back from a trip to Central America with Barry Seal, he doesn't know what's going on, and Barry Seal brings out a brick of cocaine. And L.D. Brown can't believe that because he's like Perot. He's clean. He's not into all that stuff. And he gets very mad because L.D. Brown was the Arkansas state trooper in charge of anti-drug efforts. And here he is being compromised, coming back on an airplane with cocaine on it. So L.D. Brown, who is Bill Clinton's favorite state trooper at that time, he goes to confront the governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton. He's like mad. You know, you can see there's a steam coming out of his ears. You know, he's furious. And he lies into Bill Clinton and starts giving him the third degree. And then Bill Clinton says a very famous quote to L.D. Brown. He says, quote, "That's Lassiter's deal. That's Lassiter's deal. And your boy Bush knows all about it." Meaning Vice President George Bush, who L.D. Brown liked because he was a more conservative guy, knew all about it. So that's Bill Clinton implicating Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush in the drug trade. So your question was, Gary Webb did not go that high, but he could have because he knew about that quote. If you read Gary Webb's book, Dark Alliance, he only gives you half that quote. He only tells you that it's Lassiter's deal. It's Lassiter's deal, meaning that Ben Lassiter was a very close friend of Bill Clinton who was helping him launder all the drug money. And Gary Webb left that out. So people ask, what about Gary Webb and Dark Alliance? And so the question I get a lot, okay? And the answer is he did a fabulous job. Can I tell folks the story of Gary Webb, Morgan?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
All right, Gary Webb was a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News in the mid-1990s. And he's doing a story on stuff that really had occurred about 10 years before. And he runs across these people who were Nicaraguans, who were involved in the drug trade, who had ties to the CIA. And so he writes a bunch of stories, and he interviews all these operatives, and it turns out that the Nicaraguans, when I say Nicaraguans, the anti-Sandinista Nicaraguans, Somoza's old people, were running drugs to fund the Contra efforts. And they were giving their cocaine to the black drug gangs. And one of the most famous guys that they were supplying was a guy named Freeway Ricky Ross, who's alive today. You can find him on Facebook. You can find him on the Internet. And he was basically a genius cocaine distributor. He could go into a town, start throwing cocaine parties, get everybody addicted, and suddenly he had a market, you know. And then he could get all his cocaine from the Nicaraguans, who were getting all their cocaine from the CIA. That's how it worked in a little chain like that, with complete government protection from A to Z. And so it was such a success for Freeway Ricky Ross, a black guy that was traveling. He was literally traveling around the country from city to city to city, setting up drug networks. And, you know, he's a former tennis player, and he was good at that. I'm not condoning it. I'm just telling you that. And but Gary Webb came under attack after he wrote that. So after he came out with those stories, the Washington Post started doing articles on that. The Los Angeles Times, and I think the Chicago Tribune did too. And they basically debunked all of his articles. They got 20 reporters on the job, and apparently their way of reporting is to call up the CIA, and they say, "Well, no, we don't do that." And they say, "Well, that's it.
Yeah.
If the CIA says we didn't do it." And so Gary Webb's own editor ends up rebuking Gary Webb, writing an editorial apologizing for the series. I mean, what an act of just capitulation, cowardice, and shame that guy did.
We expect it now by the corporate media.
I mean, it is a horrible. I mean, it's like it's like a Kafka novel or something. So this
so
is around the ninth.
He's hounded to his death. Really?
He is hounded to his death. So Gary Webb, you know, loses his job. You know, the reality of it, Morgan, he didn't even go nearly far enough. Do you understand that? Everything I'm telling you about Jeb Bush and Bill Clinton and the high-level people, Gary Webb didn't even touch that. He just said that the Nicaraguans were being protected by the government, the CIA, and they were giving cocaine to the black drug gangs, which is exactly what they were doing. They were giving them the best cocaine at the cheapest price. Nobody can beat the government, you know. So anyhow, Gary Webb ends up dying in 2003 with two gunshot wounds to his head. I personally think it was a suicide because he had already written a book, Dark Alliance. He'd already written multiple articles on this. He'd already gone public with everything that he knew. They usually kill you when you're like Barry Seal. You know something that somebody else doesn't know. That's when you're in order to be safe, you're much safer going public, getting on the radio, getting on TV, getting on the Internet, because if they kill you then, your story is magnified. So anyhow.
I want to ask you about point out a few names, and you can fill us in a little bit more. The first thing is you pointed out that, yes, Ross Perot succeeded in knocking George Herbert Walker Bush out of the presidency, but he put in another big-time drug smuggler in office. So he must not have known all that much about Clinton's skullduggery.
It's so sad. Well, let me tell you about Ross Perot. So Ross Perot is furious. In 1992, he is going to take out George Herbert Walker Bush. Is the last thing he does. And so people don't know this, but Ross Perot was coordinating with Bill Clinton the entire campaign in the summer of 1992. We know that because Bill Clinton's state trooper, Larry Patterson, made a cassette tape called More Than Sex. You can find it at Amazon.com. It's called More Than Sex. And he says that Bill Clinton and Ross Perot would have dinners together. They would have lunches together. They were in constant telephone contact the whole campaign. Ross Perot was not willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars of his own money. He just wanted to get enough of the vote in critical states and make sure that George Herbert Walker Bush lost. That's exactly what happened. But here's the bigger story, Morgan.
We got to wait for the other side of the break to get the bigger story from Robert of Austin, Texas. This is the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. We are on a trail here that is really cooking. So come on back after the break.
Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear to sing these songs of freedom? This is all I ever had.
This broadcast has been brought to you by the Guerrilla Media Network.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Are you over your head in debt and not sure what to do? Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out debt? Stop harassing phone calls, even stop foreclosure or repossession? Well, the answer is yes. Pick up the phone right now and call the bankruptcy hotline at the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. With 17 years' experience as a practicing attorney, Craig knows how to get the creditors off your back and get you peace of mind. Most people don't realize that bankruptcy is a great alternative by immediately stopping collection calls, allowing you to keep your home, eliminate all of your debt, and give you a fresh start. Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation at 800-281-2286 and learn how bankruptcy could help you. So stop wondering what to do with your debt and call us at 800-281-2286. 800-281-2286. Not all will qualify. The law offices of Craig Zimmerman is federally designated as a debt relief agency. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Jay's Jerky is a proud sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show. Not only that, Jay's been a loyal listener since we first got
super
started.
Super lean and beefy.
Visit thepetesantillishow.com and click on the Jay's Jerky ad anywhere on the page. You'll find great deals, Jay's weekly and daily specials, and best of all, Jay supports the Pete Santilli Show like no other sponsor.
It's smoking.
Listen live daily to the Pete Santilli Show. You'll never know when he's calling in, but when he does, you can bet he's got an offer you won't be able to pass up.
Superior quality meat.
Jay's Premium Natural Jerky. Wonderful flavors in beef, chicken, turkey, and natural buffalo jerky.
For a mouth-watering organic experience, grab a bag of Jay's Jerky today.
Place your orders today.
ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and we are getting revelations from Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas. And if you would like to call in to our show, 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. We have got just an incredible show at thanks to Robert Morrow's persistent, intelligent, and fearless work on the Bushes, the Clintons, and the drug trade. And I believe we hadn't finished with the Ross Perot work you were relating to us.
So I was relating how Ross Perot was just so eager to take out George Herbert Walker Bush, which was kind of sad in the end because he ended up replacing a Republican CIA drug smuggler with a Democratic CIA drug smuggler. But before we get to that, Ross Perot was a threat to be assassinated by the sitting president, George Herbert Walker Bush. That's how scared Bush was of Perot, because he knew he was a billionaire. He knew if he got elected president that he could appoint every single U.S. attorney. He could start prosecutions. He could throw old man Bush in jail and everybody around old man Bush in jail. That's how scared of him he was. So the reason we know he was a threat to be assassinated is because a CIA assassin named Chip Tatum has gone public years ago. If you Google Chip Tatum Pegasus, you will learn the story of Chip Tatum, CIA drug smuggling, Oliver North, Bush assassinations, Bill Clinton, etc. And so Tatum was tasked by George Bush to either kill Ross Perot or terrify the heck out of him so he would quit coming after him. And Tatum told Bush, he says, look, I've done a lot of stuff for you. I've killed a lot of people. But you know what? I don't go after Ross Perot. That's where I draw the line. I'm not going to do it. So Chip Tatum quit. He was a CIA Pegasus counterintelligence assassin as well.
But Robert, what was Chip's motivation to stop at, draw a line there? What was going on with him?
You got me fooled on that one, because why does a murderer think it's okay to kill the little people but chicken out on the big fish? I don't know. It's completely immoral any way you slice it and dice it. But apparently, in his mind, he saw Ross Perot as something of a national hero, and not a street criminal like a Clinton or a Bush. He just wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, maybe he liked his ideology, Perot's ideology, and being a straight shooter, and he didn't want to take him down, I guess.
Maybe he had a lot more respect for Ross Perot than he ever did George Herbert Walker Bush. George Herbert Walker Bush has the greatest divergence as far as public PR versus what the man actually really is that I've ever seen in modern American politics. He and Oliver North and Jeb Bush ought to be in a supermax in Colorado in jail cells next to each other. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So wrapping up here is that Perot withdrew from the presidential race in July of 1992. I think he was afraid of being assassinated. And then later...
Or having his grandchildren murdered, you know.
Or having his grandchildren murdered. That's true. And he was worried about his daughter's wedding. He gave a cover story about these Republicans are, you know, making pictures of my daughter as a lesbian or something. That was the cover story. Perot never would come out and say why he was really running. But it's very interesting. If you pull up the debates that Clinton, Perot, and Bush had, there was a debate, I think, on October 11th, 1992. All three of them were on stage together, and the topic of drugs comes up. And a guy named Sander Vancouver.
Vancouver, yes.
How do you pronounce his name?
Sander Van Oker. I just remember him. I was
Sander Van Oker. Okay. Yeah. He asked Sander Van Oker of ABC, asked President, he says, President Bush, you know, given that, you know, we have an anti-drug policy and it's just not working, what do you think about legalizing drugs? Remember, this is George W. Walker Bush has been running billions of dollars worth of drugs into America for the past 10 years, okay? And then so he gives some sort of standard political answer. And then Perot goes in and, like, he's worried about crack. Basically, Perot is pure of heart. He's worried about the crack babies. He's worried about the people on drugs. He's worried about the terrible things. And then the camera pans over to Bill Clinton. He's just looking at his feet because he's been in up to his eyeballs, too, as well as being a drug addict, okay? So Bill Clinton's a former drug addict, you know, looking at his feet. So that, knowing what we know now, 25, 20 years later, watching that debate, which was replayed on C-SPAN this past fall, which was so illuminating as far as what they were doing, you know. So anyhow, so we leave the 1992 campaign, and Bill Clinton gets elected. Bill Clinton goes to the White House. He brings a lady named Patty Thomason as the head of his White House. She was the former chief of staff for Don Lasseter, the guy that he helped money launder all the drug money with back in Arkansas. So we get to 1992, and somebody says, what about Larry Nichols? And what about the video, the Clinton Chronicles? How does that come into play here? Okay? Are you folks ready for that one yet?
Sure. Okay. We're ready.
All right. Many of you, or some of you out there, if you go to YouTube, you can Google the new Clinton Chronicles or the regular Clinton Chronicles. They're very important to watch because they're basically mostly true. And Larry Nichols is narrating, and he's talking about the drug trade in Mena, Arkansas. Of course, they were running drugs in Mena, Arkansas. Of course, Bill Clinton was doing it. But this was during the 1994 campaign cycle. And the Clinton Chronicles was put out by Republicans that hated Bush. And they wanted to talk about Bill Clinton and his drug smuggling, but they could only tell you half the story. The full story was that Bill Clinton was doing it with the Reagan administration, Oliver North, Vice President George W. Walker Bush, a guy named William Barr, a CIA guy who later became an attorney general under President Bush. So they couldn't tell you how corrupt the Republicans were in the Clinton Chronicles. And as Paul Harvey says, now you know the rest of the story.
Yes, yes. And hey, I was on Capitol Hill one time with Eddie Gillespie, who later on became the head of the National Committee of the Republican Party. Eddie Gillespie. And I remember being at one party, and there was an emerging scandal with some Republican congressman who was, don't quote me on this, but he was a pedophile or had something terrible in his background. And Eddie Gillespie, he's just saying this in jest, but it tells you something about politics. He says, well, you know, he's a pedophile, but he's our pedophile. You know, in other words, these guys cover up for each other or kind of hold the fort as long as they can. You know, it's just
right. All they care about is the power. The power is more important than the truth or what's right.
Yes.
So let's see. What is the next topic you want to talk about?
Are you finished with the Clinton Chronicles? And
yeah, I'm finished with the Clinton Chronicles. It only told you half the story. It told you all about Mena, Arkansas, and the drugs going on there. But what it didn't tell you was that the CIA and Oliver North and the Bushes were involved as well. So what's the next thing?
I've got two of these foreign names that I wanted you to comment on. I was surprised to see that a former Mossad intelligence officer was an advisor to then Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, a fellow by the name of Amiram Nir, who then came to an early death. Tell us what you know about him or their relationship.
Well, he's one of the drug smugglers for Israel that was working hand in glove with the American CIA drug smugglers. So he was a threat to go public. I think he was going to write a book talking about the other half of Iran-Contra, the other half being the drug smuggling, right? And I think that Bush got wind of that and had him assassinated, and it was probably Chip Tatum who helped blow up his plane. So, but I'm going to tell you, I have a friend.
Did they call this a plane crash, or was there an explosion aboard and this fellow died along with whoever else was aboard?
You know, I don't know, but one of their favorite ways, when I say they, one of the intelligence agency's favorite ways of murdering people is to blow up an airplane because there's no evidence left. You put a bomb on the plane, you blow it up, nobody knows who put the bomb there, the person's dead, they can't survive. It's lethally effective. So I have a friend named John Gentry of Dallas who interviewed Chip Tatum in 1997. He interviewed Tatum four times. And John Gentry told me at the time period he was doing that other people with his same name in the Dallas area were being killed and were dying unusually. And so he had to go underground. But here's what John Gentry told me about Chip Tatum. He says the agent, meaning Chip Tatum, participated in a hit on Olof Palme, the Prime Minister of Sweden. The hit was ordered because of an unwise conversation Lieutenant Colonel Auburn North had with Palme in reference to illegal firearms dealing, really weapons dealing. Loose lips sink ships was one of Bush Sr.'s favorite axioms. In this case, a foreign head of state died because of North's loose lips. North has no idea how close he came to sharing the same fate. This agent, meaning Chip Tatum, you can Google Chip Tatum Pegasus, had orders that if a handkerchief was not dropped after a conference with Gorbanifar, the entire room, including North, were to be eliminated. That was after another North gaffe. But Bush's loose lips policy extended to those who would give testimony in congressional hearings also. I believe an Israeli by the name of Amiram Nir got a subpoena. The agent I spoke of actually knew Nir, but was told, was not told whose plane it was he was ordered to bring down. Nir died in the crash and subsequent fire, another victim to the Bush's loose lips policy.
And this was before he was about to testify?
It was either he was going to testify before Iran-Contra hearings or he was a threat to write a book. One of those two things, or maybe both. And okay. Bush wanted him dead. And at that time, Bush was probably the vice president at that and giving Tatum these orders, saying, blow up this plane, kill this person, kill this person, kill this person. But he drew the line at terrorizing or killing Ross Perot. That's how we know about it.
And in the case of these two foreign nationals, Amiram Nir and Olof Palme, we may not have proof of involvement by Poppy Bush beyond reasonable doubt, but we've got some evidence and suspicion to that effect.
We have Chip Tatum on the record with my friend saying I helped kill two of those people. So that, is Chip telling the truth or not? You decide. He's telling enough truth, as far as I can tell, in many, many other areas. The Olof Palme assassination was never solved. And the reason it was never solved is because if they would have gone back to the original source, they would have found out that America did it or the American intelligence agencies did it because they were worried that Olof Palme was going to expose them. But, hey, can I talk about the story?
One more question about the – because this is the prime minister of a Western European nation.
It's so outrageous. You could almost say, well, okay, if you're going to go kill somebody in Kurdistan who's like a dictator, who's supporting terrorists there, you know, maybe we could let you get away with that one. But you're right. This is the prime minister of a Western democracy being assassinated by American intelligence agencies.
It's just mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean,
it's mind-boggling, and many people have a hard time accepting this. I can easily believe that Oliver North and George Bush would have had Olof Palme murdered easily. No, I know too much about those people.
Okay. Just a minute, Robert. Pete, do we have Rocket Radio here calling in?
He's going to have to call in on the telephone line. He was trying to call in on Skype, but he'll be calling in on the telephone.
Okay. So sorry to interrupt. Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas has done incredible research in the literature, and this is well documented. And here we've got we're discussing the case of Olof Palme, who was murdered. What year was that,
He was murdered. Listen to me, Morgan. He was murdered 10 days after Barry Seal was murdered.
That's right. So that was 1986. Wow. And I'm wondering, you know, what are the chances this guy would, he's not going to have a whole bunch of information or even be motivated to spill this, would he? I mean, it seems like...
How do you know he wouldn't have a whole bunch of information? If he'd been working with Oliver North, and Oliver North had a big mouth and started talking about all the illegal weapon shipments they were making, he might have tremendous knowledge of what Iran-Contra liability the American government had at that time.
You are listening to The Reynolds Reveal. If you'd like to call, it's 218-862-9829. We have a fabulous guest today, Robert Morrow from Austin, Texas. So if you want to learn more about Bush, the Bush crime family, please come back after the break.
Are you over your head in debt and not sure what to do? Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out debt? Stop harassing phone calls, even stop foreclosure or repossession? Well, the answer is yes. Pick up the phone right now and call the bankruptcy hotline at the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. With 17 years' experience as a practicing attorney, Craig knows how to get the creditors off your back and get you peace of mind. Most people don't realize that bankruptcy is a great alternative by immediately stopping collection calls, allowing you to keep your home, eliminate all of your debt, and give you a fresh start. Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation at 800-281-2286 and learn how bankruptcy could help you. So stop wondering what to do with your debt and call us at 800-281-2286. 800-281-2286. Not all will qualify. The law offices of Craig Zimmerman is federally designated as a debt relief agency. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Pittman & Davis is a family-owned company that's been in business for over 80 years, specializing in delivery of fresh fruit, smoked meats, cheeses, pastries, and other scrumptious gift food items.
What's more, Pittman & Davis gift food selections are meticulously prepared to ensure the finest quality possible and made in small batches to be shipped fresh daily.
Pittman & Davis, fresh fruits and gifts since 1926. Visit the PeteSantilliShow.com/gift right now to see their selections.
For a little ride.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We're going to talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
And that's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
Who are you?
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and today we are interviewing Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas, and discussing his devastating work on the Clintons, the Bushes, the drug trade, and that segue, who are you? I'm saying how appropriate that is when we pull the masks off the Clintons and the Bushes. How appropriate. Robert, we are in our last segment, and you wanted to discuss Darlene Novinger.
Right. And if folks want to read about this, you can read Rodney Stitch's books, Drugging America, a Trojan FBI, CIA, and other insiders reveal their greatest threat to America's men and women come from America's fraudulent war on drugs. So anyhow, who was Darlene Novinger? Was an FBI undercover informant in the Florida area in the early 1980s. She was a very attractive blonde bombshell who was used by the FBI to infiltrate the drug cartels. And one of the drug kingpins who she got very close to were the Smat brothers of Jamaica, William and Reynolds Smat. And one of the things they told her when she got close to them, like personally close to them, hanging out in their mansions, maybe going jet skiing with them, water skiing with them, partying with them, one of the things they told her was that they were in bed with Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush and his son, Jeb Bush, of Miami. And so Darlene says, William Smat said, well, for instance, let's take, for instance, the Vice President and his son, referring to George Bush and his son, Jeb Bush. Darlene says, what about them? You mean George Bush and his son? Which son? Smat responds, Jeb. Darlene responds, you mean Jeb Bush with the Miami Republican Party? Yes. Okay, here's what happened. So she went to his mansion down in Jamaica, and they were talking. The Smat brothers were talking about how they had to pay money to the Republican Party in Miami. At that time, Jeb Bush was the chairman of the Dade County Republican Party. He had a lot of influence, you know, countywide, statewide, because his father was the vice president of the United States. And here's what she said. She said, they told me about the visits Vice President George Bush made to their mansion. The story that unfolded was incredible, that I never thought I'd heard everything until this gentleman was done showing me his correspondence with Bush. And then he says, he said the Smat brothers told her, Darlene, about providing pharmaceutical-grade drugs to aircraft arriving from Washington, D.C., which were then flown back to Washington, D.C., and delivered by courier to the Bush White House, really the Bush Vice Presidential White House. Smat told Darlene of the money that he provided to the head of the Republican Party in Florida and the relationship he had with Florida politicians. But get this, here's what he also told her. He proceeded to tell me, meaning Darlene, how he and his family, particularly he, furnished prostitutes to Jeb Bush and George Bush when they were in Miami, Florida, and of the use of cocaine by these individuals and George Bush's staff in Washington, D.C. He also proceeded to tell me about flying pharmaceutical-grade cocaine and how the courier delivered it to the vice president's office in Washington, D.C. Now, this is Darlene Novinger telling this to Rodney Stitch. The book that is in is called Drugging America, A Trojan Horse by Rodney Stitch.
Now, what happened with Darlene?
She came under attack. Okay. People always ask, you know, are these people still alive? Well, no, they try to kill people like this. See, she's so naive. She doesn't understand. So she made a report to the government saying, I've been getting some information here. The Bushes are involved in the drugs. Here's what she's doing, her job as an FBI informant. But what she doesn't know is the people above her and the people above them are reading this, and they're friends of Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush. And they're giving him that information.
Yeah.
And he's taking it and running with it. Because at that time in Florida, George Herbert Walker Bush, the Vice President, Ronald Reagan made him head of the South Florida Drug Task Force. And all that means is that everybody in regards to prosecuting the drug trade worked for Vice President Bush. And then all the drug dealers work for him, too. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, he's got expertise. Yeah, right.
So when you're the drug dealer and you're running the South Florida, it'd be like John Gotti being head of the South New Jersey Drug Task Force or something, you know?
Right.
It's the equivalent of that. And so what happened to Darlene? Well, what happened was she was staying at the mansion in Jamaica one time, and somebody from the U.S. Attorney's Office called and told the Smat brothers that she was an FBI undercover informant, and her life was in danger, and she had to kind of sweet talk. If you're a cute blonde, you can do this. She had to kind of sweet talk her way out of it, saying these people are crazy. They're going to be saying, what are they going to say next? That I work with the CIA? And here's what she said. She says, that particular office, the Miami U.S. Attorney's Office, almost cost me my life. I was at the mansion of a major drug lord in Jamaica, the Smat Brothers, and a phone call was made when I was in the living room of their house. I could hear part of the conversation, and they were talking about me. I could hear Raymond saying, the FBI in Miami said who was working for them? They were talking about me, because she was. I felt trapped. I was in his home on an island trapped, and I'm hearing this man get this call, and I thought, I'm going to die. I really, because these drug dealers will kill you. I really did. I thought, woo, that was a close one. And I'll tell you, and he kept looking at me, and he was a little grumpy, and I said, the next thing you know, they'll have me working for the CIA. Eventually, he lightened up, and I talked my way out of that one. Later, I found out that gentleman was very heavily involved, and he was not playing on the up and up. So whoever told William Smat that Darlene was an FBI undercover agent was intending that she be killed by those drug dealers on that island.
So I gather she got out of this alive, and then she faded into some other line of work, I would hope.
Well, if you're a cute, tall, shapely blonde, you can survive situations like that. Many other folks would not have survived that. And so she basically came under, you know, her career obviously was dramatically curtailed from that and came under governmental harassment. She was not killed, though. But
we are speaking here on the Reynolds Reveal with Robert Morrow, fantastic researcher on corruption in America. And I know you want to advise people how they can find out more. The basis of your knowledge, including books. And one of the great things about books is that even corporate publishers will allow truth to be proselytized there that they won't in the regular other media. So go ahead, Robert.
Right. So people ask, what are some really good books to read about these topics to inform you on that? Number one,
let me interrupt. We have Rocket on line one. Rocket, do you have a question for Robert Morrow? Rocket, go ahead.
Hi, sir. I had a question for you.
Yes.
Sure.
I was looking for some old notes. I was trying to come up with a name for you. But there's a famous guy who dropped out of the neocons. He's a reformed neocon, and he was saying, to my surprise, that the drug, which just came right after Larry's interview earlier on Pete's show, but the guy was saying that they were trying to destroy the Clintons, the neocons, and that the drug allegations were concocted. Which I found shocking, because I always believed it.
He's full of baloney, because we've got it documented from every side of the angle. We got it documented from the Bush side with Al Martin and Chip Tatum coming public and Terry Reid coming public. We got it documented from the Clinton side by Bill Clinton's favorite state trooper, L.D. Brown. L.D. Brown's book is called Crossfire. Witnessing the Clinton Investigation. It came out, I think, in 1999.
Yes.
So that guy is full of it. That's all I can say. If you can find his name, I can probably tell you why he is.
It's not my position. I was just wondering. And I was wondering, sir, lastly, if you would comment with your expertise, can you explain to us, please, can you make sense out of what's going on in Washington, be it the Dixie mob versus the Chicago mob versus the Pentagon versus the intelligentsia versus the Mossad versus the American people. You know what I mean? Because it's not a long line of bushes.
They're all in there. I mean, in reality, the intelligence agencies at their lowest levels are mafia, okay? There's not any difference. I'm not talking about somebody who analyzes the Russian crop report, okay? That's an analyst, okay? But in the operations division, they thrive on lies, deceptions, illegality, dirty dealing, criminality, which is exactly what the mafia does.
The Bourne Identity, the Bourne Trilogy. Hey, this is a fantastic show. Robert Morrow of Austin, Texas, thanks for coming on The Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and we unfortunately didn't get to Robert's book recommendations in a nice, tidy package, but if you go online, he's got an article, April 25, 2013, titled The Bush Family, Oliver North, and the Murder of CIA Drug Smuggler Barry Seal. So you just Google a few of those words, you will come up with his April 25 article. Just great stuff. Thank you, Robert Morrow, for coming on my show, The Reynolds Reveal.
Hey, it's an honor to be on it.
Okay, Mr. Merle.
Hey, I think I found the name of that guy. The caller was calling about. Was it Larry Johnson who he's referring to?
Oh, he dropped off. Actually, Larry Johnson? Hold on one second.
Yeah, Larry C. Johnson is a former CIA guy who's a big fan of the Clintons. And I've actually emailed corresponded with him before. And he was in the CIA in the 1980s. So I don't know if he was doing all that stuff or whether he's just too dumb to figure it out. I don't know which one it is. You there?
Yeah, he unfortunately he dropped off and
that's okay.
And he's not a regular, is he, Pete? He's not a regular, you know.
Rocket?
No. Yeah.
Oh, yes, he is. He actually has the Rocket Radio show here on GMN.
Oh, but, okay. Well, yeah, then you can pass that on to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I just did, yes.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm guessing that he's referring to Larry C. Johnson, who I don't put a whole lot of credibility in Larry C. Johnson. He basically is a guy who was in the CIA, who I can understand he didn't like the Bushes now, but you don't go from pro-Bush to pro-Clinton and move very far. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's to me, it's just different groups, different parts of the same snowflake. But so anyhow, as far as your show, let's see, what is your name?
It's Pete Santilli, and it's a conservative talk show. It's actually one of the fastest growing shows in the country right now on Talkstream Live.
You're on Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right?
I'm also on. Yeah, it's actually Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific time.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have one of my producers contact you via email, and it's Murrow, right?
Well, it's
Murrow.
And we can go through the same material because see, different audiences need to hear this. You understand that?
Yeah, we just surpassed. I think it's about. We're at about 500,000 listeners now.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm ready to rock and roll on this one, Pete,
yeah,
okay? Because
yeah.
Let's just, this stuff is just sitting out there on a table. It's not like it's secret.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
It's all been out in books for 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, and they actually refuse to talk about this on MSNBC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. Right.
And they refuse to talk about that. But you know what, my friend? we will talk about it on your show, and we will rock and roll. How about that?
Oh, yes, sir. And, you know, that's exactly what I attribute our growth to, is that the mainstream media is not talking about the stuff that we're absolutely
needs to be talked about.
Willing to
and,
talk about,
hey,
yeah.
Robert, you know, later in the year, as we approach JFK, I want to bring you on.
Yeah, I can do that. And I want to tell Pete that too. Pete, my expertise is also the JFK assassination as well, and you can talk to Morgan about that or read some of my material. I'll be glad to talk about that too one day.
Oh, I'd love to. I have a 3-hour show, and I'll have Ryan Bannister actually will be getting in touch with you, and then he'll get you all set up, and then we'll have you come on the show. I really want our listeners to hear what I just heard.
Yeah. I want to give you guys another little nugget here, okay? Oliver North was the one who tried to take the rap for Iran-Contra. You have to understand that George W. Walker Bush and William Casey were the ones, those three were the ones doing it, okay? But the guy who Oliver North patterned himself after, meaning his career, is a guy named General Edward Lansdale. And there's a picture of Lansdale and Oliver North together in the 1980s, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Lansdale was photographed at Dealey Plaza in the afternoon of 11/22/63 in the wake of the JFK assassination.
Wow.
And people like me think he was a key player in the JFK assassination.
Wow.
So you have the out-of-control foreign policy in the 1960s. Fast-forwarded 20 years, you have the out-of-control foreign policy, unaccountable secret team behavior of the 1980s.
Yeah, can I ask you something? Have you ever looked into the so-called, all these so-called investigators of the JFK cover-up, have you ever looked into how those people have also participated in the actual cover-up, just going out there to find out what people were discovering, what was known? And
well, I won't talk too long about this. You have to understand, Pete, mm-hmm. that the murderers of John Kennedy
mm-hmm.
were the ones running the non-investigation. When I say that, I mean mm-hmm. Lyndon Johnson, J. Edgar Hoover, CIA and military.
Right.
They were all in it.
Right.
Not the whole military, you understand? Not the whole CIA,
mm-hmm.
but at the leadership level of LBJ, Hoover, Curtis LeMay, General Lansdale,
mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the rich guys outside of government, the Texas Oil executives.
Who, the Rockefellers and Texas Oil.
Oh, yeah.
Whose families are still prominent today. The Hunt mm-hmm. family, the Johnson family, the Bush family.
Yeah,
and that's E. Edward Hunt. Is that the Hunt family you're referring to?
No. E. Howard Hunt.
E. Howard. I'm sorry, not Edward.
H. L. Hunt, the oil man.
It's mm-hmm. a huge difference. H. L. Hunt was the richest guy in the world at that time. He was very close to Lyndon Johnson. I think he was involved in the JFK assassination. His son today is a guy named Ray Lee Hunt, who is very close to the Bush family and gave $25 million to the Bush Library. He's also a neocon, very aggressive on foreign policy to protect oil interests, just like his dad. But back to this Lansdale thing, see, that's how it's tied. So you say, why aren't these topics talked about in the mainstream media? Because it's a Pandora's box, Pete. Once you open the Pandora's box of either one of them, CIA drug smuggling in the 80s, Watergate,
mm-hmm.
or JFK assassination, everything else starts flying out.
Oh, yeah. You know,
hey, that's like Russell Baker, kind of an innocent journalist, you know, family of secrets. You start stumbling over these things, and you keep on following it. It's just horrible.
Can I ask you gentlemen, both of you, the same thing? You were talking about Ross Perot, and I liked Ross Perot. And by the way, I'm a former Reagan Republican. That's why I was so disappointed to hear you say that. But, you know, I would say now that we've discovered all these criminals are running around, they've hijacked, they've literally overthrown our government. Do you ever see a day that we're going to be able to just take them to trial, to convict them and throw them in the slammer forever? But they all need to go to jail.
They do need to go to jail, and I'm glad you're talking that way. No, it won't happen. I will just settle for exposure, shame, and humiliation. I'll settle for that. And another thing I want to point out, Pete, is that it's a human nature. You have to understand this. Humans are sinners. We've been that way since prehistoric times.
Mm.
So it's not a matter of knocking out the bad guys and putting in the good guys, because we're all sinners to one degree. It's a matter of just who are really off the pale and who are just normal sinners. I'll settle for normal sinners rather than the egregious ones, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like petty corruption versus massive, inexcusable corruption.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but back to my point is the reason they don't talk about this in the mainstream media. For example, the reason MSNBC and Fox today will both tell you the why that Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist and a lone nutter that killed the president is because if they told the truth about the JFK assassination, it wipes out the leadership credibility level in both political parties and the media and academia and business for the past 50 years.
Right. That leadership all around in this country, either passively or actively, is so corrupt. And it would be revolutionary. Yeah, it would be. A lot of people don't want to go there. You know, what will follow?
Well, here's why they don't want to go there, because once you learn the truth, then you're compelled to do something about it, as opposed to being ignorant and not knowing what was going on and ignoring it.
And another thing they do is they'll, like, seal the record for national security reasons, because we could never undo all of the legislation that President Barack Obama has signed, of course, if we expose that he's not eligible to be president. You know, so for national security reasons, they won't take action to bring him to justice.
Hey, Pete, I got to tell you this. Remember, I voted for George W. Bush in 2004. Mm-hmm. He was horrible about signing these secrecy things. The first thing he did when he got into office was to make all the records of the Iran-Contra era sealed up.
The
first thing he did when he got into office
was
an executive order to do that. And Obama does the same thing. They're all in bed together, Clintons, Bushes, Obama. But mainly the Clintons and the Bushes are really tightly knit together, very close together. Obama's not quite in their inner circle.
Yeah.
So, it's a great show, guys.
Yeah, great show. I look forward to having you on. I really look forward to it.
Yeah, terrific. And thanks for all you do, Robert.
Yeah, thank you for your service to our country.
It's an honor. And, you know, like Jeb Bush says, there's no consistency for the truth. I beg to differ. Okay?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
All right, sir.
You want the truth. Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Robert.
All right,
we'll see you later, Pete.
Bye-bye.